Now, normally at this time of a Monday, we'd be talking food, but we are setting aside our food feature just for this week because I really wanted to be able to accommodate an interview around Child Protection Week, which is underway. Speaking of the new cabinet, you know, last week as the new cabinet was announced, the UCT Children's Institute put out a call on the new ministers saying, please, please make the protection of children one of your key priorities, saying it has as high a cost in social and economic terms, as do all the other big challenges like poverty and unemployment and inequality. And they've pointed out that so many of the factors driving violence against young boys and girls are inextricably tied up with violence in society, full stop. They're factors like poverty, like alcohol and substance abuse, like patriarchy, like social norms, which have not made it outrageous to harm a child. And with me in studio today is somebody who has witnessed the impact that they talk about, the impact of violence against children on a near daily basis. Edith Creel is a social worker who has specialized in working with traumatized children. She's done so for nearly a quarter of a century. She has played an integral role in so many important projects like the Teddy Bear Clinic and the Child Witness Project. And she's here with us today in her guise as director of Jelly Beans Inc., which is a non-profit organization that specializes in the field of child trauma, abuse and neglect counseling. Edith, lovely to have you with us and welcome to Cape Talk.
It's awesome to be here.
The Children's Institute report points out something that should be blindingly obvious, but maybe is not, that this is not normal, that the number of child rapes and murders that we have become used to in South Africa are not commonplace around the world. Do you think that's part of the problem, that we've become so accustomed to it, it's become so much a part of our daily lives, that there is almost a sense that it doesn't shock us as much as it should?
I think very much so. You know, violence is part of our everyday lives, particularly for some children living in poor and violent communities. And, you know, we hear about it, but we keep on thinking sort of not in my backyard. But at the end of the day, it happens everywhere to all different children, all religions, all colors, all ages. And one of the studies that they did recently in 2016, which was a huge study called the Optimus Study, one in three children will be abused, sexually abused by the age of 17 in our country. Now, that includes girls and boys. In fact, boys are at higher risk than girls of being sexually abused.
Really? That might surprise some of our listeners.
Absolutely. I think abuse, when we talk about sexual abuse, you know, it feels like something that we talk about women or girl children. Mm-hmm. The study showed that 34% of girl children would be victims and 37% of boy children. And in particular, the Western Cape has the unfortunate prize, I suppose, I don't know, of being the province in the country with the highest rate of sexual abuse against boys.
Really? Now, I mean, is it partly because we aren't conditioned to look for it as much in boys as we are in girls? Do you think that perpetrators perhaps get away with it more easily?
I think it's a little bit more complicated in boys because, you know, we teach boys that cowboys don't cry. Mm. You know, what it means to be a man is we're tough and, you know, we can be angry or we can be happy, but, you know, there's no space for being sad or scared or so. And, you know, it's very difficult for boys to report. Our systems are generally more geared towards girls. And for boys to report, it has such a stigma because what if the community finds out? You know, what will they say if they find out my abuser was a man? Does that make me homosexual? What does that mean for my future? So I'm not trying to minimize what happens to girls. It shouldn't be happening to any of our children, boys, girls. But I also want to comment on the fact that I think we also need to be careful that we don't just look at sexual abuse as being abuse. You know, the amount of physical abuse and emotional abuse that our children are experiencing, the amount of domestic violence they're witnessing, that's a form of abuse. And, you know, for us, it's become quite commonplace. Oh, you know, it's just how it is in South Africa.
Another story that's maybe in the headlines, you know, for one day and then gone again.
It's really only the worst of the worst that make the headlines, you know. One child who was raped and murdered and disappeared versus the many, many, many other children that are being raped, abused, physically, you know, violated on a daily basis.
Now, we speak often about the fact that this is a cyclical thing and that it is often a damaged adult who would in turn damage a child. is enough attention being paid to prevention of abuse? Because I know, given how extensive the problem is in South Africa, a lot of resources are by necessity deployed to dealing with the aftermath and to supporting victims, which is so important. But that takes up so much time and effort and money. Does it leave enough for the very important work of saying, well, how do we break this cycle and intervene with the adults before they become abusers themselves?
The Department of Social Development has a very small budget, unfortunately, and they have to do, you know, a whole range of different things. And as much as they'd like to put more effort and money and resources into the prevention, it's just not enough. You know, they're responding on a daily basis to crises, and there isn't time or resources to be dealing with those prevention issues. I think also what makes prevention a difficult concept is, how do we measure it? You know, is it something that we can measure in a year, or does it take 20 years? You know, how do we measure? And, you know, I think also maybe just to comment on, you know, when children are hurt, they sometimes grow up to hurt other children. One of the big things that we're dealing with at the moment as well is children hurting children. So in terms of sexual abuse, approximately 43% of children being sexually abused are being abused by other children.
That's a staggeringly high figure.
Absolutely.
43% are in fact being abused by other children.
Exactly. And our system is just overloaded. You know, so, you know, dealing with, if I could use the word, you know, a child who's just been a victim of the trauma itself, you know, there aren't enough resources. Now we're adding on another layer where this child who is a victim has now also hurt other children. And there are very, very few resources out there. You know, there's NGOs doing amazing work, but the funding isn't there. Our NGOs are closing their doors, and our children aren't getting the opportunities to access healing. And that's, for me, very sad, because then that becomes what we refer to as intergenerational trauma, because then they will pass that on to their children,
And so the cycle continues. Now, talking of access to healing, this is something that Jelly Beans is passionate about, because, as you say, resources are limited. Resources might be available in a big urban center, but not necessarily so for the child in a small town or in a rural area. And you can't reach every single one. But can you talk to us a little bit about Jelly Beans' approach and what you try to do for as many children as you can reach?
What we believe is to really try and think of, how can we impact on children's lives in the best way possible, given the resources that we have. So we do work with children directly, doing therapeutic services. However, we're very thoughtful of taking that information to inform training. So training of professionals, of lay counselors, of community organizations who are working with these children on a daily basis. And, you know, how can we help them learn to identify, become more aware, how to respond if a child makes a disclosure? So for us, working with the children directly informs our training, and then also informs resources that we develop, because we know that if we can take our experience and put it into a resource, then that can be helpful. So, for instance, we have a book called Voices of Hope, and it has 25 therapeutic stories in it, written by various different people and illustrated by children. It's a beautiful book. And the idea behind it is that most children we know will never be able to access healing, but possibly if the clinic sister or the headmaster or the library or, you know, a foster care mom has a book of Voices of Hope, there will be opportunities for children to begin to access healing moments. And it's not the ideal. We'd love our kids to be in, you know, what we ideally see as therapy, but beginning to share healing messages with children is very empowering. And so the book for us, if we can't be everywhere, at least some of the resources can be out there supporting the children.
Another resource of yours, which I think is so important, is one which has been developed with parents and caregivers in mind. Many children find it difficult to speak to adults about what has happened to them, because they might not even possess the language to describe what has happened, or because they have a sense of shame, because body parts and private parts are things that weren't spoken about. There are still, unfortunately, many households in which that conversation just never happens. Tell us about the Our Bodies booklet and what you hope to achieve with its distribution?
I think, you know, if you ask any parent and you say to them, would you like to prevent your child from being abused in any way? Most parents will say absolutely. But what we tend to do is we tend to try and say to children, this is what can go wrong. If it goes wrong, come and tell mommy. But we are not having the conversations to contextualize this for children. So for me, the most important part really of preventing child sexual abuse is to begin having open conversations with your children from a young age. And so that children know, doesn't matter what, doesn't matter the words, doesn't matter how shameful or scary it might be, I can go and talk to my parent or caregiver about anything. And, you know, that's what's important at the end of the day. So we cannot try and scare children into, you know, abuse and preventing abuse, because the responsibility for preventing abuse belongs to adults, not to children. And so it's the adults that need to start saying, we need to have these conversations with children, because if we open up the channels of communication, it makes it easier for our children to have these conversations with us, or if not with us, then maybe with someone else that they trust. But at least they know that they can speak about it. And so for us, it's really important to help parents and caregivers and teachers to start these conversations with children, young children, because it doesn't help we have the conversation by they 8 or 10 or 13. It's too late. Children are being exposed to sexuality daily in some shape or form. And if nobody's helping children understand what's going on around them, it becomes problematic for children. And sometimes that means that they act out on other children. So we really need to see prevention of child abuse, not only as telling children the scary things that can happen, but really opening up channels of communication. And we feel very passionate about that.
So an interesting comment from somebody on our WhatsApp line, and I'd like to ask you to give me your response. The comment is that many people believe it's only men that can sexually abuse children. Now, you've told us that one thing we need to be mindful of is many, many cases of sexual abuse are being perpetrated by other children. But would you like to respond to that comment of only men? Because that's not the case.
It isn't the case. And I think what's, you know, rightly so, what makes it a little bit different is that because women are generally the caregivers of children, what might be considered unusual or, you know, concerning if a man were to do it with a child versus a woman doing it with a child. So, you know, let's say putting cream on a child's private parts when they're changing their nappies, you know, a normal parenting thing to do, but a woman could use that opportunity, let's say, to do something inappropriate, and we would still consider it mothering. We would still consider it, well, you know, she's doing what she needs to do, whereas with a dad or a man, that's very different. What we also know, though, is that abuse by women is very rarely reported. So we know it's happening a lot, but it's very rarely reported. And it's often much more complex than the abuse where men are abusing children in relationships. You know, the dynamics often between a woman and her son or her daughter are often a little bit more complex and therefore more difficult to report for children.
Interesting. Well, thank you for this WhatsApp anonymous saying thank you so much for bringing up the issue of children being abused by other children. I was a child abused by an older child, and because it was a child, it was never acknowledged to be abuse, even by my mother. I only told her long afterwards. This is healing. I mean, there's so much in that message to respond to, but thank you so much for sharing that with us. I mean, that comment about the fear, I mean, that not being believed is such an agonizing one, but we know that unfortunately there are still too many instances where people are prepared to doubt the child and want to think the best of the adult and not believe. I mean, what advice for you for parents on believing children when they report this kind of thing to them?
I think two things. I think the one is trust your instinct. So if your gut is telling you there's something wrong, it means there's something wrong. And even if your head doesn't quite have it figured out yet, trust your gut. So that's the first thing. The second thing is believe your child until proven otherwise. So if a child is making a disclosure, as a parent or a caregiver, it is your responsibility to believe that child and then to engage in further processes to then find out did it or did it not happen. But you don't have to investigate it as the parent. But your job as a parent is to believe.
It's before we go, because I'm mindful of the time marching away, I just wanted to mention you're actually hosting, Jelly Beans is one of the partners in a big regional, African regional child trauma conference later this year. I was intrigued to see one of the comments that one of the issues on the agenda for that conference is looking at traditional ways of child rearing that could help reduce levels of abuse. Can you just take 1 minute elaborate for us on what you're going to be looking at there?
I think it's about finding what works for Africa. I think there have been in the past many things, many protection mechanisms that we've had in Africa that have helped to protect our children, and we've lost them. And it's really about going back and saying what was helpful, what was not helpful, and how do we plan the way going forward.
So if you're interested in reading up more about that conference, the website is childtraumaconferenceafrica.org. It is happening in August this year, looking at responses to and prevention of child abuse, violence and neglect. It's called the Africa Regional Child Trauma Conference. Edit, won't you just share Jelly Bean's own website for listeners who might like to reach out to you for more info?
So that's www.jellybeans.org.za.
Jellybeans.org.za. Thank you so much to Edit Creel, the director, for being with us today, and our best wishes to you and your team.
Thank you for listening.